Hello, welcome to the Adam Fitch podcast. I'm your rather tired host, Adam Fitch. Today I'm joined by Patrick Mahoney, the CEO of We Are Nations. Probably, if you buy any esports merchandise, you've probably got some from his company. Thank you for joining me today, Patrick.
Oh, no problem. Glad to be here.
So, I was just wondering, when are we going to get esports flat caps as such?
What's a flat cap?
Well, you're rocking one right now, right?
Oh, one of these. Oh, like a newsboy hat?
Is that what you call it?
That's what we call it.
Or it sounds like I know more about your industry than you.
My wife also calls it a Peaky Blinders hat, because back in the day, you could put your razor blades through here.
That makes complete sense.
And then I would throw it at you for asking such a hard question at the start of the
Well, just thinking, I'm obviously trying to make dad hats a thing. I'm just wondering, you're obviously doing your Peaky Blinder hat thing, you know? I like it.
It's an ascension into it. It's an ascension into an older age. Like, I can pull it off at my age. You got to rock the dad hats at your age, and then you can sort of work towards this.
Would be my suggestion. So when I become a dad, I have to like go with the dad hats at that point.
Ironically, yes.
Oh Jesus! What about these ugly dad shirts that I'm wearing though? I can pull them off at any time, right?
Yeah, but I've got some coming for you. We've got some. Trenton wanted to let me know that he's got one coming to you.
Oh Jesus! I'm very appreciative as always. So the previous episodes that I've done, I've not really asked about origin stories at all, because I mean you kind of hear them over and over, but I don't know how much play yours has had in the esports side of things, really. So how many people have you told about how you got started in merchandise and apparel and such?
Yeah, I mean it's you know, I mean you're right. I've been doing music.
I would love to hear about all of this, really, because it's a really interesting story from what I've heard.
Well, it's been a long time. It's been almost 25 years. So, you know, I literally got into it because the band that I was in the early 90s, you know, broke up and got dropped from our label, and I had to pay rent. My girlfriend broke up with me. This literally all happened in 1 week. And it's all true. And we were in Little Rock, Arkansas. I'll never forget. We were at a donut shop, and we discovered that we had lost like a box of t-shirts, which resulted in a fist fight between me and the drummer. So we broke up. And then I went back to, I was living, I'm from Boston. So I went home and I went to the screen printer and I said, hey man, I lost 100 shirts and I have no way to pay you. It's like, you know, $600 or something. Mm-hmm. And so he gave me a job and I clean screens in the screen room for a month or two, and I don't know, probably made $8 an hour or something like that. I kept six and he kept two or something like that, and I paid off the debt and never really left. I mean, I left the screen room, but never really left screen printing and merchandising. So, you know, over the next sort of 25 years or 22 years, I guess, we sort of went to the screen room, and one of my first big clients was Oasis and Radiohead back then, and then moved on into sort of the metal years like Slipknot and Mudvayne and System of a Down, and you know, most recently it's been things like Panic at the Disco and Fall Out Boy and Train. And you know, the reason we started Nations was because you know, we had been approached on the music side a couple of times to sell the business, we ultimately decided not to. My partner, Chris Cornell, decided not to sell his share in the music business. So we wanted to find something else to do. So we discovered esports through a venture capitalist, which is pretty ominous looking back, right? And
when was this? What year was that when you discovered esports?
This would have been 16, sorry. Right. And we went to an event, we went to ESL Cologne, and you know, not knowing anything about it, walked in and was just blown away. I mean, you had 15,000 kids, you had a top-notch production, you know, it was quite international. I forget, it was, you know, I don't remember who the teams were. I could probably figure it out, but it was like, you know, it was like a Polish team and you could probably look this up, a Polish team and a Brazilian, I don't remember, maybe a Russian team or something.
Yeah.
But It was the finals, and we're just blown away. You know, and CS:GO is the kind of game that you don't need to totally understand it to get it, blah, at least get sucked in, right? I mean, so it was like just the perfect storm. And I think one of the things we realized was is that a lot of the kids that were at the event were, there was an argument that there was the same kids that were going to our concerts, right? And so that there was a definitely, you know, you sort of look for these baselines, like, okay, well, I don't necessarily understand what's going on here, but I understand how this market might work. And then really the second thing, the one that really sort of got it, when I totally got it, that esports was a total thing, was we went to in Las Vegas, we went to a Call of Duty event, and that was a lot different. It was a lot, you know, it was a pre-franchising, event, just, it's small, 2,000, 3,000 kids. And, going on the Thursday or the Friday when the open brackets were going, and it was just, you know, 92 teams out of 100. You know, you have the 8 teams, but of course you're going to sort of tell the story by Sunday. But there's 92 teams, like, going for those slots, and it's, you know, it's just kids. They were just kids, high school kids, young college kids, you know, put their teams together on their own, got themselves to Vegas on their own, obviously practice on their own. I mean, they created these teams. It was rare DIY. And right away I was hit by the, this is what I used to do. You know, it was just music, you know, instead of going to events in Las Vegas, we were booking our own tours, and, you know, instead of like going online and practicing, we were in a practice space and putting on our own tapes, you know, back then. But,
tapes exist.
but it was really the same thing, just updated for, you know, years later. And that was just really a sort of a watershed moment. And you know, I've always been supportive of DIY, and I've always been supportive of sort of new disruptive things. And I was lucky enough to be in music when sort of, you know, Nirvana broke, as they say, and that was a big watershed moment for the music industry. And it's happening again, you know, with esports. And I'm just really lucky that I get to do it twice. You know, so we started Nations. The first year was a disaster, you know, made a lot of mistakes, but, you know, you learn from your mistakes and you just keep going. And, you know, fast forward to now, I mean, most of the staff is a lot of the front facing staff is more endemic, certainly younger. And they grew up with gaming more than I did. And, you know, we learn from each other every day. You know, the thing about merchandising is that that's not changed. And the way we do it, the way we set up product ranges, the way we create e-commerce, the way we sort of market things across, you know, across platform, the way we expand things into other territories, the way we start negotiating with retailers, which is a big thing for us next year. Those things have been the same more or less always. You know, they're the best practices that established a long time. So, I handle and Alex, who's my COO, handle. We're sort of the older guys, but the rest of the front facing, all the commercial directors, e-commerce people. I mean, they're younger. They grew up with gaming. They get the culture a lot more. And we're like I said at the beginning of this, we're learning from each other every day. And that to me has been the most rewarding thing.
Yeah. So you say you started like 2015, 2016, right? How did you kind of perceive the whole apparel and merchandise side of esports at that point? I know you say pretty much everything's the same, but like, did you see a lot of areas where things were lacking or things were more advanced than you expected? Or,
well, you know, I mean, it was the first thing we keyed in on was the jersey, right? I mean, that was the sort of differentiator. You know, I remember walking around the up and down the river, the Rhine River, before we went into the Cologne event. Chris and I, we started seeing these kids with these sort of interesting sublimated V-necks, and we're like, what are those? You know, it's like literally like, that was like day one, so I mean, it was great that there was sort of a piece that identified with the sport already. I mean, that was good. You know, I don't know if we've changed that much. I mean, we've played around with and continue to play around with fabrics, and of course it's getting a little bit more technical, and as data comes through and competition increases, I mean, I think you're going to see the jersey sort of turn into, it's going to sort of morph into a bit of a science experiment. I really do, which is great, because I think it validates the fact that it's a competitive sport. But that's, you know, continues to be the sort of the emblem, the fan emblem, you know, and it still continues to be by far our biggest seller. But what we've started to do and is help teams identify their own personality. I mean, the thing about esports is every organization has a different personality. You've got some teams that are very much aligned with sports, you know, and you've got some teams that are much aligned with say lifestyle brands. And you know, our job is to go in and sort of pass that, those core pieces, performance pieces like the jersey, is sort of help them find a voice on the say casual side, or the any merchandise beyond the jersey. And that's, you know, just something we do from team to team.
Okay. Well, I'm actually curious to say, I know absolutely nothing about how deals work and such. So you entered a scene, right? And how do you go about approaching a team or a league or an events operator, whichever company it may be, and say, look, we want to produce for you. We haven't done anything in esports yet. Like, how do you get that kind of conversation started, and how does it transition into a deal being done, and then you handling that side of their business going forward?
Well, you sort of fake it till you make it, right? like the first couple teams we did, we didn't know what we were doing, and we just pitched them and learned as quick as we could. And like I said, it didn't go great, and they know who they are, so I apologize again. But you know, like I said, we learned quickly, and the thing is, the trick for us, I think, was sort of identify what was the same, right? So you know, manufacturing apparel is roughly the same. If I'm making a sublimated piece for esports, or I'm making a sublimated piece for anything else, sort of activewear piece, it's roughly the same process. I mean, your patterns change, your fits change, your things like that are different, but that's normal, and that exists anyways. So go with what you know. And to answer your question specifically, you know, I always saw this as a sport, you know, from day one. I got it. Like when someone told me that they had tested in a university study, you know, muscle reaction or reaction, just reaction time. And this particular player had scored third or fourth in a 100, you know, and this included baseball players, like good hitters, and, you know, basketball players, anyone else that needs that fast hand-eye coordination. And I'm like, okay, this is a sport. I get it. Because where it ends up going is that competition gets to a point where marginal gains is what is the difference between winning and losing. And I think in a lot of ways we're already there. So it becomes about improving those marginal gains. And that to me is like the essence of sport in a lot of ways, outside of the entertainment. I mean, if you're looking at the science of sport, right, which is something I've always been interested in.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got this entertainment value too. It's already there. It's clear. Kids are engaged. So, you know, for us, it was always a sport. And so, okay, well, sports has a certain amount of best practices. So all our deals, to answer your question specifically, is in most cases, we approach a team and with a very standard licensing deal, which basically says, we will pay you a royalty for everything we sell, and the channels that we sell through are online and at events, marketplaces like Walmart and Amazon. And then something we've been developing and something that we're excited for next year is selling through retail. So you've got three or four channels. Every channel has a slightly different royalty rate, just based on the economics of that channel. But it's, you know, it's we didn't invent that. That already existed. So that's how we approach it. You know, best practices from sport.
Yeah. Well, so earlier on you mentioned about esports being disruptive and stuff. And when I think about a team that's kind of disrupted a lot in esports in the past couple of years is Nadeshot with 100 Thieves, right? Mm-hmm. Like the way they've come in and seemingly changed things, but they haven't, I don't think they've reinvented the wheel. They've just done things better than other people and kind of thought about things a bit more. And obviously one of the three main arms of their business is apparel, and the whole demand there. Mm-hmm. He even saw when they first came out with the LCS jerseys, for example, it was obviously very different from the other jerseys out there. How disruptive do you think like 100 Thieves has actually been, and how well do you think they're doing on that side of things, on the whole apparel merchandise side?
I mean, my guess would be that 100 Thieves from day one knew that they wanted to take a different path.
Yeah.
Right? And so if you look at other brands, culturally relevant brands or lifestyle brands, you know, they're always based on something. You know, I grew up during surf and skate. I mean, that was obviously, those were my brands, you know. That's what 100 Thieves is doing. I mean, it's, there's a, and you know, and others too, there's a couple others that are doing the same thing. They're basically saying that gaming is our lifestyle. And as such, that lifestyle can be celebrated with an endemic brand. And to me, 100 Thieves is going to transcend teams. You know, mm-hmm. it's gonna, it could very well be, you know, everyone, I hate this word, but, you know, supreme. It could be, it could be.
I mean. Well, I mean, what 100 Thieves has also done well, in a sense, really, I think, is like merging with the music side, actually, which is obviously your background as well. So they brought in Drake and Scooter Braun. I think they both co-led. Was it Series A or the Series A, I believe it was, and came in as advisors and co-owners.
Yeah.
And increasingly more and more we're seeing this as well. So I think ESL's partnered with maybe like a German like metal festival or something. I can't remember the name of it now. And Rogue's parent company, Rekt Global, has got about 50,000 different celebrity and music investors and such. So there's obviously a big crossover there. So that must be quite interesting for you, obviously, having been in both industries now.
I think the music industry needs this, right? It's another way to reach fans.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my test market is my son, 15, and his friends. And it's basically the average day until I kick him out to go play sports or something, is, you know, there's a Spotify playlist open. There's a YouTube channel open and he's playing a game. You know, so he's consuming all this media. Yeah. At the same time, and I would argue that his focus is least on the music, right? So music fans now are very sort of song oriented, single oriented. You know, they don't necessarily go deep into an artist like I did when I was a kid. You know, where I could tell you what the third song on the second side of the third Led Zeppelin album is, or whatever. You know, right. But they still consume music, and the numbers and the streaming numbers and all that show it. So it's an obvious way in, and you're seeing it everywhere. I mean, we've talked to everybody. We've talked to Sony and Warner Brothers about it, and I think things will eventually happen. It's sort of prioritizing what we want to do, and sort of building a linear plan to get to where we need to get. So when we start executing on things like that, there's a foundation to build off of. But you know, for sure, we talk about it all the time.
Yeah, I just find it. It obviously makes a lot of sense, right? They want the young audience, they want to appeal to those. So I think we've seen, I can't remember who it is that's partnered with Luminosity now. It might be Warner Canada or something like that. But like, so they're putting out playlists, like they've got a gamer specific playlist, for example. Yeah. You play that on the stream, and Tory Lanez is involved with LG, and then there's Overactive Media with the Weeknd. It's all over the shop. But I'd say 100 Thieves is also, it's just a good thorough point for all of this, because so they announced that they were building a huge facility in LA, and with that there'll be a retail storefront for their apparel, and obviously that leads into what you're saying about going into retail again there, and that kind of connects to a partnership you made recently with Nerd Street Gamers and their local host facilities.
Yeah.
So I just wonder if we could speak about that a little bit.
Well, the for us it's just part of a part of, you know, like I said, building foundations and moving forward. We look at Nerd Street in two ways. Number one is that we have this sort of native knowledge from the music side of running concessions, you know, going in and selling merchandise at events, festivals, concerts, whatever. So that's something we already do. And what the Nerd Street opportunity gave us the ability to start with two, obviously more permanent than like a band rolling through town and playing in the arena. But conceptually it's the same thing. We put in product, we sell that product, and we split proceeds with Nerd Street, just like any other concession would work. And we hope to roll that out next year with them. But I, you know, my ultimate goal there really is to it's certainly nice to be doing it now, but I think it also helps us prove concept. So you know, in 18 months or 2 years or whenever, I would be more than happy to have sort of passed some knowledge off to Nerd Street for them to run those retail stores on their own, because I obviously know that at some point down the future there'll be other sources of esports merchandise. There already is, you know. So I would love to see Nerd Street turn those retail locations into, you know, more of a neutral thing than just sort of stocked by nations. That's going to have to happen. So I sort of see us transitioning out of that relationship, becoming a vendor of theirs, but, you know, sort of teaching them how to do retail or helping them set up the retail program. And that's fine, because what I'll get out of that is I'll be able to go to other accounts, any sports account, any lifestyle store, any whatever, and say to them, look what we've done over here. Like, here's a pile of data that's sort of formatted in the way that you guys look at sales data. Mm-hmm. We've done that for you. Here's the market. Let's build from there. And you know, those conversations are already happening. I can tell you that every retailer that we've talked to, from big to small, has basically said, we know it's a thing. We know it's going to be a big thing.
Yeah.
We just need to figure it out. And for us, that's good because, again, we speak their language. You know, that's what we come from. Going back to best practices, the things that we don't have to reinvent, we're not going to reinvent those. And so that language is already spoken between us and these customers.
Okay. Well, I'm just thinking now. So obviously, like the local host facilities and such, they're occupied by gamers and people competing, right? So that's very much the audience. But if you go to just any like random retailer that I don't know American shops too well, so I don't want to speak out of term here, but say it's in a retail store that doesn't deal necessarily in esports, it's just like a supermarket, but it's got bits and bobs on the side. Like, do you envisage having the same kind of success out of those things, or do you think it makes more sense to be in, say, the esports arena in Las Vegas and having merch there and with local host and similar things in Arlington Stadium and such? You know, I can't imagine there's going to be the same success rate, so which one would be the better avenue to go down?
Well, we're in Arlington. That was actually the first concession we ever did.
And, oh, right. And I should know that.
Not a lot of people know, but over the first year, it's like, you know, sales increase. I mean, it's starting to prove itself out. If I had a whiteboard, which I don't, I would draw three circles, and I have to give Alex, our COO, credit for this because it's one of his favorite diagrams. But the inner circle is basically where we're at now, which is like early adopters, big fans, you know, bordering on obsessive, right? You know those kids.
I do.
Yeah, you know, they're buying the core stuff. They're buying everything that we put out. It's a direct relationship. You know, 10 times out of 10, it's either we sold it to them online or we sold it to them, you know, at an event. You know, that's your inner circle. You know, think of the layers of the earth or whatever. So that's the core, right? Yeah, the core.
Okay.
And then, you know, the next circle, if I remember from seventh grade, it's called the mantle, right? And that's sort of the next step of kids. They're fans. They might have their teams. They might have their players. You know, they're conversing about it. They read the press. They spend time on the websites. They know who's winning and they know who's ahead in different leagues. All that sort of stuff. Again, if you parallel that to typical sports, sort of your average fan, right? That's the next circle. And the way we reach them will be through, I would guess, specialty retail. You know, so sporting goods shops or lifestyle shops. So it could be in America, it could be Dick's. In the UK, it could be JD. There's stores like Zumiez and Tilly's and Urban Outfitters here in the US and, mm-hmm. you know, equivalents in Europe, of course, you know. That's sort of your second circle. And that's, you know, good fans. Like I would consider that's where I'm at with regular sports. Like I love football, your football, not our football. And I know enough about it to talk about it to be in that circle.
Okay, what's your team, by the way?
Chelsea.
Okay.
Is this over?
Over? No. I've just lost a little bit of respect.
Am I out of here? No.
Sorry, I put you off there.
No, it's totally fine. It's totally fine. You said that we should do some weird shit. So there you go.
You're telling all my secrets now to the people watching and listening.
Yeah, you should have heard the conversation we have before we started. Where was I? Yeah, so that's where I'm at. That's where a lot of people are at. And you know, I would buy, you know, the replica jersey, but probably tend to buy a T-shirt to wear to the gym or headwear or something like that. And so that's the next circle. And like I said, you reach that through specialty retail and, you know, stuff that people are, you know, you sort of have to be aware of what's going on to understand where to get that stuff. You know, the third circle, which is the crust, if I remember correctly, the outer circle, which ironically is probably the widest circle at the end, is where you finally get when when it becomes a cultural phenomenon, and you've got sort of very casual fans, fans that are into it when they're winning, which is a, you know, as you know, is a big thing in sports. You know, eventually, one of the things we talk about all the time is you know, what happens when my kid, hopefully in say 15 years, when he's 30, no younger, has kids, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to be there? What's he going to pass on to them? Because, you know, my dad passed on the Red Sox. You know, I grew up in Boston, and I'm a Red Sox fan because I was born in Boston, or my, you know, that's the only reason, you know, and yeah. I hate the Yankees. I couldn't even tell you why. You know, it's like genetic, right?
It's just been instilled in you from early on. Yeah.
Right. And you have that, of course, with football too, right? So it's wait till that happens, you know? And so that's almost like the third circle. That's like when you know, the first thing you buy your kid is a onesie from G2, because they're your favorite team. And so the minute your baby comes home from the hospital, he's wearing a G2 onesie, you know, or, you know, someone's winning and suddenly the whole, you know, this geolocation stuff with the Overwatch League and with Call of Duty, I think it's going to start changing. As someone starts winning in Houston, right, suddenly you've got this whole new set of fans. That's the outer circle. That's maybe just buying a T-shirt. So I know that's a long explanation, but that's sort of how it rolls out.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't know why, but I kind of notice this quite a bit. So say, like the off-season for League of Legends, for example, say I sign a really big player, really popular player. I know, like, on a personal level there, they've got their own brand and they can bring a lot to my team, right? I rarely ever see, like, merchandise geared towards them. So say, like, a jersey with their name on at the back or something like that, or, I don't know, a mouse mat with their face on. I don't know whatever it could be. And I rarely ever see any, like, player specific things until they've been with a team for a long time. So how hard is it to create things like on demand for teams?
It's not. I mean, we did it with the LCS this year, where you could order a jersey and you could have a custom name drop on the back, and that could either be an existing roster player or you could be your own gamer tag. And, you know, I don't know the answer to this, but I can tell you that if we sold 100 custom jerseys, My anecdotal guess would be that at least 80% of those were custom gamer tags. You know, so the fans are identifying themselves with these jerseys as opposed to, you know, a star player. And that's a good question. You know, I think that changes. I think that compresses. I mean, you know, we had some great wins this year. I mean, we had a fantastic Optic long sleeve drop, which was just, you know, defied all expectations. You know, it was like, those were some high five moments in the office. And, you know, the same thing with G2 in the world, where we sold a lot of stuff.
I imagine.
and you know, people tell us that, you know, as a comparison, you know, I would ask someone, well, how many jerseys does Liverpool sell? And it's, I forget the number, but it's, you know, tie. And then you take, okay, well, how many does, you know, what's a smaller team?
Scunthorpe United.
Yeah, something, or what's that one just north of London? I forget. But, you know, we're beating them, right? We're beating them. So it's still pretty small. And I guess my point is that ignore the low end of the Premier League and look at Man United or Man City or Liverpool or whatever. That's just a different stratosphere, right? We just need to get there, you know. So my guess would be, as those circles expand, so we're selling to that inner circle now. I'm a massive fan. And quite frankly, if I'm buying a G2 jersey, I'm putting my name on it. You know, it's just, I think that's just the mindset. But as that circle expands, and that player asset becomes more valuable to serious fans as opposed to lifers, like the serious fans and the casual fans, I think it's what you'll see.
Okay, well, I don't know. I like to do my fair share of complaining, right? But I also try to keep an eye on everyone else's complaints. And what one I've seen quite a lot is like the clothing for women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. There's not always a lot of options. I think FlyQuest did quite a successful drop where there were leggings and such, right? And perhaps like a crop top or something. But we don't see too much variety and options available for women in esports, really, and for the female supporters. Why is that? Is it just because the audience is so overwhelmingly male that it doesn't make sense to like look after another demographic, or what is it? What would you say?
I think that's a great question, and I think that I don't have a great answer for you. You know, it's you are 100% correct. We have not put the attention into it that we should. I can say that we've had conversations with various parties. There's about doing it, but ultimately we get to the point where my fear is this, and you know. You probably remember the esports dress from, like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think about it every day and laugh.
Do you? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the joke. It's like, you got to avoid the esports dress. And for me, you know, it's if we're going to do it or when we do it, I just can't put out something that was designed by males that's a little bit smaller, right?
Exactly.
And call it girl stuff. So, there's been conversations with female influencers about doing a line. There's been conversations with teams about bringing in, you know, the right female influencers to help them launch their lines. And those conversations continue to move forward. It's one of the things that I wish was moving faster. It's not, but it's something we are talking about. But I mean, I think the takeaway I'd want your listeners to hear on that question is that, you know, we feel it's very important that we get it right. And it has to be authentic. It has to be, you know, done with the right intentions. You know, again, going back to my branding and surf and skate, it's like, you know, people were probably aware that, you know, Quiksilver ultimately started Roxy, right? And that was very, very successful because it was, you know, essentially designed for women, mm-hmm. Specifically.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say it's like a problem just with nations. I think it's kind of like wide across the industry. It's not just down to one party not pulling their weight or anything, you know. Yeah. But it's just obviously having you here, I need to ask about it. So no, I'm not placing all of the blame on yourself. But yeah, I find it strange how we're almost in 2020. We know full well that women are into esports and into gaming, right? Obviously, more and more it's happening and they're getting interested. But I just found it strange how it's never been. I don't know. It's never been adopted. Like you launch your male line, you don't launch your female line until perhaps later on, like with FlyQuest, and that's when there's only a lot of demand. And I mean, I think Fnatic, when they took over the Overwatch League stuff, I think there was a lot of complaints there. Sorry to bring up a potential competitor or anything, but you know, and there were a lot of at first when it was announced, it's like, right, okay, cool, we've got an established party that's going to come in and really do things properly, and we quickly see that wasn't the case. And then I think that was supposed to be an exclusive deal, right? But then, like, Ultimate came in and ended up creating some merchandise as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even when they bring in people who've been in the sport side of things for so, so long, like, they're not even getting it right there by many people's opinions. It's a weird one to me.
I don't have it, you know, I'm... Hands up. You're absolutely right. And it needs to be dealt with. It definitely needs to be dealt with.
That's fine. So, right, talk about me complaining, right? I just want to have a little moan quickly. So, if you can't tell by the accent, I'm from the UK, I'm English, and I myself, I'm a fan of esports. I don't get to watch it or play really as much as I'd like to, and definitely my competing days are behind me as I failed in Call of Duty many years ago. But, so say I want to support a team. I'm not necessarily saying it's a team that you yourselves cover. I go on their website. It's only accommodating US customers, right? A lot of the time, the actual shipping costs cost more than the product. Say if I'm just buying a dad hat, for example, right? Say that's $25 and it's $30 for shipping. And then there's also the customs charge, which could be £20-25 or something when it gets into the country. So suddenly it's costing me roughly three times what it should be for me to get this one product. And I think that's like a real oversight, and I'm not saying that just for the UK, but for plenty of other countries, right? And it's like a lot of revenue potentially missed for these organizations, and hence for the companies that are dealing with their apparel and merchandise. Is it just about a demand thing? If there's a lot of demand in the UK, then you'd be more likely to accommodate for that nation, or is it something different?
Am I allowed to plug my own company now?
You do you. I mean, yes, of course.
Okay. So that we identified that right away, and again, going back to best practices, we were already doing that. I mean, I've had sub companies in other territories for ages, and those sub companies in most cases were established, you know, in the past to handle e-commerce. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so There is a demand thing. I mean, I've got teams that I just can't justify necessarily a U.S. team that I can't necessarily justify setting up an EU-based web store, and of course, vice versa. But someone like G2, for example, there's a U.S. store and there's a EU-based store, and the U.S. store takes U.S. dollars, it ships from the U.S., and there's, you know, localized customer service, localized returns. Right down to data protection laws are localized. And then the exact same thing exists in the EU. Localized currencies, localized shipping and handling, localized customer service, and all the other things we have to do with GDPR or whatever, mm-hmm. are handled. And that's the way that's the answer, right? I mean, that's the way you've got to do it. And so, you know, the downside to that is it can be expensive, and it, you know, and there's a admin task to setting up a foreign subsidiary. You know, I mean, it takes for, you know, we have to pay VAT and we have to jump through all these hoops in the UK with compliance, and, you know, opening a bank account as a foreigner is a pain in the ass, and, you know, like, those are all the things that go with it. And the average single team's probably not going to do that. So that's the answer. I mean, we do like Cloud9's a good example where we actually in the last couple of months have opened up their European only store. So they handle the US themselves, and they sent us a bunch of product and we distribute it for them in Europe. And that happened around the time they did their Puma deal or launched their Puma stuff. So that's been pretty successful. I've been pretty happy with the sales. And I think they have been too. So that is an option. So here's the plug. If you need a European store, nations can do it.
There you go. So yeah, go to them. Cause I can admit, like when I bought a Optic Hat, I think it was, there was an EU store there and it was fine. But yeah, I'm trying to think of the teams in specific that I've had problems with. I think maybe like FaZe Clan, I was looking at a hat. I think maybe Team Liquid. I don't know. It's just, it was a lot more common than I thought it would be. You know, I just thought, okay, they're going to supply Europe, but no, it's like, yeah, they will, but if you're willing to pay absolute through your ass just for it to be delivered, you know, so I just end up not spending my money, and which is probably a good idea anyway, but I shouldn't spend so much on hats. But I mean, if I could, I would literally empty my bank account each month just on more of these to keep me bald head warm, but it's just not available all the time, you know?
I mean, Liquid's a global brand. FaZe Clan's a global brand, and you know, I agree. And look, I mean, it's, you know, obviously I have some skin in this game, but that's what we're here to do. I mean, you know, the one thing you need to understand about nations, or people need to understand about nations, is we don't necessarily have plans to be a brand. You know, I don't think you'll ever see nations branded stuff. We're not trying to create a lifestyle brand. We're trying to create a sports merchandise company for esports. And that really comes with it's sort of an a la carte menu. If you need us to do this, this, and this, but not this, that's totally cool. And B, it's pretty much white label. You know, I'm not co-branding my you know, every jersey with a big nations logo on the here. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen. You know, it's all white label. That's our lane. You know, when we get into branding, which I'll actually be able to announce a deal pretty soon.
Okay.
It'll be through partnership with an existing brand. That's what we do. So, you know, and this is a good example, is that if there's a big US team that needs a European store, we can sort of help them do that. And it's not just Europe. I mean, my last trip of the year is to Mexico to figure all that out for Latin America.
Okay.
We're going to open up in Latin America next year, both with local teams, and see what we can do with some more of our global brands down there. But you know, one of the things that I'm hoping to get out of that is some of the big Mexican brands. I mean, there's some stuff that could potentially come out of those territories that would sell eventually well, say in the United States or Europe, and I see Asia too. Some of those Asian teams
will come.
Yeah, so that's sort of looking at this stuff all the time.
Well, so you mentioned Cloud9 and Puma. You said Puma, but it's Puma. And we've also Puma. Seen, so like Nike with Furia, Brazilian team, and then Heretics and Adidas. You'll say Adidas, but it's Adidas. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen all these like major sports brands coming into esports. How do you think they've handled like their first forays into the industry? Because I for one think the Cloud9 and Puma things were handled very well. I never bought anything, so I can't say how it was from like a customer point of view. But just like consuming the content, the launch, and the actual range that they put out, it seemed to go pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it's validating. It's. I mean, we welcome it. I mean, we do have this sort of education, that we, you know, education process we do with teams. But if you look at, you know, a good example for us would be Optic and Champion, right? So
yeah.
So we've always done Optic stuff, all their white label stuff, all their jerseys, all their casual wear. That's always been us. Again, it's sort of Optic branded. It may say Nations in the tag or something like that. But it's, you know, it's basically the Optic brand. I mean, it's their line, you know. When we do a collaboration with Champion, in the case of Optic, we would do a lot of the legwork. We would sort of be the go-between the team and Champion to you know, get approvals and do all the design work. And then we're ultimately, in most cases, the route to market, you know. So that's probably the important thing. So I think where I see this going for us, and again, going back to what I said, is where we want to be a sort of best in class sports merchandising company for esports. You know, again, we know our lane, and one of the things that we don't have is a brand, but one of the things we do have is a direct route to market. So I think you'll see more of that as you know, our involvement with Cloud9 gives Puma a route to market into Europe. You know, eventually someone's going to come along and do a collab, and we'll help create route to market. A lot of these brands, I think, and I think teams should understand this, is that it's a very valuable deal you can do with a sponsorship or a collaboration or whatever you want to call it with that. But I think the value you can offer those brands is a route to market. You know, they're actually trying to find, in addition to the impressions they want, you know, they're actually trying to find new ways to sell their stuff. Mm-hmm. So that really is key. So, you know, I think we totally coexist with those brands. And again, okay. if you look at traditional sports, the same thing happens. You can go to the Lakers store and you can get all the official Lakers gear, but then there's a ton of other licensees and sort of internally made stuff in that store. That's just where it's going to go.
Yeah. So you mentioned Optic Gaming and mm-hmm. Champion, right? And I want to apologize on behalf of Optic fans, even though I'm not one myself really, but they've died a horrible death in recent months, obviously, with everything that's transpired. I guess it started brewing maybe 2017, but yeah, so I imagine, I'm not asking for any details on this, but I do imagine that sales have dropped dramatically for Optic, and that brings me to a point really that I hadn't really thought about before, like the challenges of like sustaining that thing, especially, so you've got to deal with Optic, and that's a very lucrative deal when everything's going fine. But when that drops off, and you say you make a percentage on those sales, like how, I don't know, like being out, not having any control over for those things must be quite daunting, right?
I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, you know, it's part of the narrative, it's part of the story, and we're trying to tell that story. So, you know, Optic Optic has been really good to me. You know, it's probably one of the first big teams that I worked with. We were able to do a deal with Infinite to bring over a bunch of people. That's where we got Sector 6 from.
Yeah.
That's where a bunch of my staff came from. You know, I'm very close with Chris Chaney. I mean, it's always been a good relationship, you know, and it continues to be, you know, as they've moved into the Immortals. In fact, I signed it yesterday. It's been countersigned. So we've extended our deal with Optic plus the Immortals, and we have,
you've got it here first, an Adam Fitch podcast exclusive.
I signed that yesterday. And look, I mean, it's I'm a fan, you know, and we'll see what happens, but I can tell you who my Call of Duty team is. It's Optic, you know,
even
it's,
now
it, yeah, it's gonna be, because that's you know, that's where my loyalty stands, that's where it comes from. And so, you know, I think they've got to go win. You know, you got to go win. But if they do, I think it's going to work. You know?
Okay. That's fair enough. Yeah, I was just thinking about, like, obviously, it being out of your hands, how popular they are. And say if they start losing in the season, and obviously they haven't got Hector and Scump and Crimsix now, Like that's a lot of potential sales like down the drain.
But don't forget, I mean, it's been 25 years of sort of depending on other people, right? I mean, the one thing I haven't done yet in my career is actually owned a brand, right? So I've never necessarily been in control of my IP. So, you know, I've had bands break up. I've had bands cancel tours. I've had, you know, unfortunately, band members die, you know. And it's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, it sucks, but it is what it is. So I've got a very serious question here. Very, very serious. So how do I...
It means it's not serious.
No, it means it's very serious. How do I get Adam Fitch merchandise sorted with yourselves? What do I need to do to make that happen? It's exclusively a dad hat line.
Send me a vector file.
And that's it.
It's magic. It's just magic. It's just a special kind of magic.
So like in a lot of instances in these pots, I don't really need to enter a deal properly. We'll just operate on Word and we'll be fine that way, right? And everything will be favourable and no one will get fucked over or anything. Everything will be great.
Yes. No, why am I pausing? I'm not pausing because I'm going to rip you off. I'm pausing because I'm trying to decide if I should tell you the truth. I'll tell you the truth. There are hundreds and hundreds of sort of print-on-demand services that'll do a way better job than I'll ever do.
Why better?
Because we've set up for a certain sort of scale, you know, certain sort of minimum, certain sort, a lot of our product is destined for a customer as opposed to sort of custom work, you know. We can do it, but I know this sounds sort of weird, but a lot of times I know what I'm good at, and maybe doing small runs of things isn't what we're necessarily good at. And since I love you so much, since you got me that aspirin at ESI, I had a wicked headache. I'm gonna tell you that's the way to go. I mean, I remember being, and it goes back to 20 years ago when I was on a CMJ, which is a old college radio thing back in the old days when college radio was a thing. And they would have these panels on merchandise, and you know, you'd have four people from four different music merchandise companies, and when CDs were selling and the money was flowing, and it was just a great industry back in the 90s. And you know, our egos were bigger than the Mount Everest, all of us. You know, there's like four Mount Everest sitting next to each other. And we get these huge arguments about nothing, about total bullshit, right? Like just music industry ego fueled arguments. And then inevitably after the panel, some kid would raise up his hand and say, "I have no idea what you guys are talking about. You all sound like you're a bunch of dicks, but I got this new band and I need 12 shirts with blue paint on them. Where do I get them?"
Here. Fuck off.
So it's always been one of those things. It's like sort of understanding that very basic needs like that. I think there's people that have filled that market really well.
Okay, that's fine, but that's predicated on the fact that I don't have a rabid and like incredibly large fan base that are just passionate about everything that I do. Mm-hmm. But I do have that, you know, like. Undoubtedly one of the most popular figures in the entire industry, and you're just turning down the most lucrative deal you'll ever sign. But I mean, that's your loss. I'll go to Teespring or whatever the latest thing is, I don't know, and I will get Adam Fitch dad hats there, and I will watch sales just absolutely fly in, and then I will call you and just laugh, and you'll know what's what.
In the time you've asked that question, we've already built your Shopify store. You just need to approve it.
Oh, I wouldn't run it myself. That's the thing. I'd need you to run that, so.
But in all seriousness, yeah, of course I'll make you some hats.
Okay, in all seriousness, I was taking the piss, but I appreciate the sentiment.
I know. No, I just think it's important that people understand that
oh, of course.
You know, that's one of the reasons we bought Sector 6 is because they serve a very specific market.
And that's more like amateur teams, right? Sector 6.
Yeah, and prior to that, we would try to do that because you never want to turn down business. Okay. And we just end up disappointing people, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, you don't really want to do that. But I do enough of that as it is, so yeah, I shouldn't really start getting to the merch business myself. So I've got one more thing I kind of want to talk about quickly, yeah. and then we'll wrap things up, because I've taken a lot of your time up. So what would you say needs to change? What's the one thing that needs to change the most in your side of the business? What's one thing that needs to change so things can be better altogether, if there is anything? Or is everything just rosy and perfect at the moment?
You know, again, we're just trying to educate teams what our role is, you know, and you know, there's a lot of teams out there that do a really good job with their internal merchandise. I mean, someone like Liquid is runs a great operation. Someone like Cloud9 runs a great operation. You know, with Cloud9, for example, though, we've been able to identify certain parts of their business where it's better for them to outsource it to someone like us. I think that will continue. You know, but the one thing I'm really trying to do, you know, it's interesting. You have in esports, it's the way we look at it is you know, you've obviously got these top down leagues like Overwatch and Call of Duty, which they brought in licensees and they sort of control the teams, and it's very much a franchise model with all the things that go with franchising in terms of, sorry,
it's all good, don't worry.
Pretty gross. They go with franchising, so top-down merchandising. It's you know, they you know, it's just how that stuff works. It's sort of league-controlled merchandise, which in a lot of ways makes things easy and approval. But you know, sometimes product tends to be very similar across the board, and you know, it's pluses and minuses with everything. And then you've got what I call the sort of relegation model, which like CS:GO is a good example, right? Where the teams still remain independent, but they sort of get into these bigger tournaments through attrition, right? So if you look at our roster, you can see that we're sort of betting on more of those on those relegation type models. You know, for us, it's just going to teams and saying, if you're doing what you're doing on your own, it's going great, seems to work, it's direct revenue, you've got a staff, you've built out an infrastructure. We're certainly saying that, you know, if this is a core competency for you, that's great. You know, but the one thing we can do is say maybe take a limited license to do a program into LIDS or into one of these sporting goods companies we talked about earlier, or you know, in the case of Cloud9, do the European web store. So really, you know, again, long answer to a simple question. You know, our sort of biggest, it's not even a challenge, our biggest task is to sort of educate teams on what we do and how we're doing it.
Okay, that's great. And I will say from my humble perspective, somebody who kind of watches from afar and covers things, like, you're doing a good job. Like, I will say that, like, no bias. Like, if you're doing a shit job and you're on air, I will tell you, like, that's just how I am. So, no, I think Nations is at the forefront of what you're doing. Obviously, I recognise there are other companies out there, and I'm happy to burn any bridges by saying that, like Nations is at the forefront of it for me. So where can people find yourself and your company on social media and such?
We are at, let me look that up.
Oh, that's the hardest question yet, actually, surprisingly.
What's going on here? Oh shit, can I do this?
Is it not just We Are Nations everywhere?
Yeah, it's like at We Are Nations, but there's like a weird line. I'm sure someone came along and got it before we did or something. WeAreNations.com, obviously, We Are Nations. It's at We Are Nations with a hashtag at the end for both Instagram and Twitter.
Okay, and what about yourself? If people want to follow you for all of your wisdom and such on Twitter, You don't know you're an at.
I do know.
That's pure boomer energy. I'm sorry, mate.
Yeah. Okay, boomer. I'm not a boomer. I'm actually Generation X. Solidly generated.
Well, it's boomer actions, either way, you know. Traits of a boomer.
You know, ask, you know.
I can tell you what your at is before you know. If you want, I'll plug you.
At We Are Nations CEO.
There we go. He's actually on the screen, but it's entertaining to watch him find it himself. You can't see it, but you will later on. No, you know, sir, I just want to thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
I got a text there. Everyone's heading to Mitch's Deli. I'm gonna do a podcast. I'm not gonna order a sandwich.
No, you should go get a sandwich right now. You should. No worries. We're wrapping things up anyway.
No, I appreciate it. I hope this didn't get drag on too much. And
no, not at all.
That's for doing that hat deal. That'll be fine. That'll be fine. But I love you, man. And I look forward to seeing you. Are you going to come to dinner on the 16th? I can't tell people where it's going to be because they'll obviously rush it. But I'll be in London.
You go, well, I live nowhere near London, so the chances of me going to that, but I'm not traveling 2.5 hours for dinner, you know.
It's just down the street.
Not quite, no. On the 16th, I will be probably working stupidly hard still, unfortunately. So no, that's a no go from me. But I hope you enjoy yourself in London because it kind of does my head in at this point. But anyway, thank you for everyone who has watched or listened to the Alan Fitch podcast. Go follow myself, go follow Patrick. I'd prefer if you followed me, really, because I'm more active.
That's fair.
And okay. I will catch you all on the next episode. Thank you again.
All right, thanks, everybody.